Good evening and welcome to our Good Friday service. My name is Trevor. I'm the lead pastor here at Risen. As some of you know, Good Friday marks the death of Jesus Christ. And we call today good because of what Jesus' death means for the redemption of the world. This evening, we come together as a church family to do three things. First, we come together to hear and remember the events of Jesus' death. Second, we come together to unpack the meaning of his death. And finally, we come together to draw near to God in prayer. Our service this evening will end in silence. And while we focus on the somber reality of the death of Christ tonight, we anticipate a raucous celebration together on Sunday morning. We will be together in this room because of the weather on Resurrection Sunday morning at 10 a.m., and we do hope that you'll join us here. And now, let's turn together to hear and remember the events of Jesus' death. Some of you during this time may want to close your eyes and hear this passage. Others of you may find it helpful to follow along either on the screen or if you can read it in the Bible in front of you. But no matter how you listen, let's ask God to give us ears to hear from God through his word in this text. Once again, the Gospel of John, chapters 18 and 19. When Jesus had spoken these words, he went out with his disciples across the brook Kidron, where there was a garden, which he and his disciples entered. Now Judas, who betrayed him, also knew the place, for Jesus often met there with his disciples. So Judas, having procured a band of soldiers and some officers from the chief priests and the Pharisees, went there with lanterns and torches and weapons. Then Jesus, knowing all that would happen to him, came forward and said to them, "Whom do you seek?" They answered him, "Jesus of Nazareth." Jesus said to them, "I am he." Judas, who betrayed him, was standing with them. When Jesus said to them, "I am he," they drew back and fell to the ground. So he asked them again, "Whom do you seek?" And they said, "Jesus of Nazareth." And Jesus answered, "I told you that I am he. So if you seek me, let these men go." This was to fulfill the word that he had spoken, "Of those whom you gave me, I have lost not one." Then Simon Peter, having a sword, drew it and struck the high priest's servant and cut off his right ear. The servant's name was Malchus. So Jesus said to Peter, "Put your sword in its sheath. Shall I not drink the cup that the Father has given me?" So the band of soldiers and their captain and the officers of the Jews arrested Jesus and bound him. First, they led him to Annas, for he was the father-in-law of Caiaphas, who was high priest that year. It was Caiaphas who had advised the Jews that it would be expedient that one man should die for the people. Simon Peter followed Jesus, and so did another disciple. Since that disciple was known to the high priest, he entered with Jesus into the courtyard of the high priest. But Peter stood outside at the door. So the other disciple, who was known to the high priest, went out and spoke to the servant girl who kept watch at the door and brought Peter in. The servant girl at the door said to Peter, "You also are not one of this man's disciples, are you?" He said, "I am not." Now the servants and officers had made a charcoal fire because it was cold, and they were standing and warming themselves. Peter also was with them, standing and warming himself. The high priest then questioned Jesus about his disciples and his teaching. Jesus answered him, "I have spoken openly to the world. I have always taught in synagogues and in the temple, where all Jews come together. I have said nothing in secret. Why do you ask me? Ask those who have heard me what I said to them. They know what I said." When he had said these things, one of the officers standing by struck Jesus with his hand, saying, "Is that how you answer the high priest?" Jesus answered him, "If what I said is wrong, bear witness about the wrong. But if what I said is right, why do you strike me?" Annas then sent him bound to Caiaphas, the high priest. Now Simon Peter was standing and warming himself. So they said to him, "You also are not one of his disciples, are you?" He denied it and said, "I'm not." One of the servants of the high priest, a relative of the man whose ear Peter had cut off, asked, "Did I not see you in the garden with him?" Peter again denied it. And at once, a rooster crowed. Then they led Jesus from the house of Caiaphas to the governor's headquarters. It was early morning. They themselves did not enter the governor's headquarters so that they would not be defiled, but could eat the Passover. So Pilate went outside to them and said, "What accusation do you bring against this man?" They answered him, "If this man were not doing evil, we would not have delivered him over to you." Pilate said to them, "Take him yourselves and judge him by your own law." The Jews said to him, "It's not lawful for us to put anyone to death." This was to fulfill the word that Jesus had spoken, to show by what kind of death he was going to die. So Pilate entered his headquarters again and called Jesus and said to him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus answered, "Do you say this of your own accord, or did others say it to you about me?" Pilate answered, "Am I a Jew? Your own nation and the chief priests have delivered you over to me. What have you done?" Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would have been fighting that I might not be delivered over to the Jews. But my kingdom is not from the world." Then Pilate said to him, "So you are a king?" Jesus answered, "You say that I am a king. For this purpose I was born, and for this purpose I have come into the world, to bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice." Pilate said to him, "What is truth?" And after he said this, he went back outside to the Jews and told them, "I find no guilt in him, but you have a custom that I should release one man for you at the Passover. So do you want me to release to you the king of the Jews?" They cried out again, "Not this man, but Barabbas." Now Barabbas was a robber. Then Pilate took Jesus and flogged him. And the soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns and put it on his head and arrayed him in a purple robe. They came up to him, saying, "Hail, King of the Jews!" and struck him with their hands. Pilate went out again and said to them, "See, I am bringing him out to you, that you may know that I find no guilt in him." So Jesus came out, wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe. And Pilate said to them, "Behold the man!" When the chief priests and the officers saw him, they cried out, "Crucify him! Crucify him!" Pilate said to them, "Take him yourselves and crucify him, for I find no guilt in him." The Jews answered him, "We have a law, and according to that law, he ought to die, because he has made himself the Son of God." When Pilate heard this statement, he was even more afraid. He entered his headquarters again and said to Jesus, "Where are you from?" But Jesus gave him no answer. So Pilate said to him, "You will not speak to me? Do you not know that I have authority to release you and authority to crucify you?" Jesus answered him, "You would have no authority over me at all unless it had been given to you from above. Therefore, he who delivered me over to you has the greater sin." From then on, Pilate sought to release him. But the Jews cried out, "If you release this man, you're not Caesar's friend. Everyone who makes himself a king opposes Caesar." So when Pilate heard these words, he brought Jesus out and sat down on the judgment seat at a place called the Stone Pavement, and in Aramaic, Gabbatha. Now it was the day of preparation of the Passover. It was about the sixth hour. And he said to the Jews, "Behold your king!" And they cried out, "Away with him! Away with him! Crucify him!" Pilate said to them, "Shall I crucify your king?" The chief priest answered, "We have no king but Caesar." So he delivered him over to them to be crucified. So they took Jesus, and he went out bearing his own cross to the place called the Place of a Skull, which in Aramaic is called Golgotha. And there they crucified him, and with him two others, one on either side, and Jesus between them. Pilate also wrote an inscription and put it on the cross. It read, "Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews." Many of the Jews read this inscription, for the place where Jesus was crucified was near the city, and it was written in Aramaic, in Latin, and in Greek. So the chief priests of the Jews said to Pilate, "Do not write 'the King of the Jews,' but rather, 'This man said, I am the King of the Jews.'" Pilate answered, "What I have written, I have written." When the soldiers had crucified Jesus, they took his garments and divided them into four parts, one part for each soldier, also his tunic. But the tunic was seamless, woven in one piece from top to bottom. So they said to one another, "Let us not tear it, but cast lots for it to see whose it shall be." This was to fulfill the scripture which says, "They divided my garments among them, and for my clothing they cast lots." So the soldiers did these things. But standing by the cross of Jesus were his mother and his mother's sister, Mary, the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. When Jesus saw his mother and the disciple whom he loved standing nearby, he said to his mother, "Woman, behold your son." And then he said to the disciple, "Behold your mother." And from that hour, the disciple took her to his own home. After this, Jesus, knowing that all was now finished, said, to fulfill the scripture, "I thirst." A jar full of sour wine stood there. So they put a sponge full of the sour wine on a hyssop branch and held it to his mouth. When Jesus had received the sour wine, he said, "It is finished." And he bowed his head and gave up his spirit. Since it was the day of preparation, and so that the bodies would not remain on the cross on the Sabbath, for that Sabbath was a high day, the Jews asked Pilate that their legs might be broken and that they might be taken away. So the soldiers came and broke the legs of the first and of the other who had been crucified with him. But when they came to Jesus and saw that he was already dead, they did not break his legs. But one of the soldiers pierced his side with a spear, and at once there came out blood and water. He who saw it has borne witness. His testimony is true, and he knows that he's telling the truth, that you also may believe. For these things took place, that the scripture might be fulfilled, "Not one of his bones will be broken." And again, another scripture says, "They will look on him whom they have pierced." After these things, Joseph of Arimathea, who was a disciple of Jesus, but secretly for fear of the Jews, asked Pilate that he might take away the body of Jesus. And Pilate gave him permission. So he came and took away his body. Nicodemus also, who earlier had come to Jesus by night, came bringing a mixture of myrrh and aloes, about 75 pounds in weight. So they took the body of Jesus, bound it in linen cloths with the spices, as is the burial custom of the Jews. Now in the place where he was crucified, there was a garden. And in the garden, a new tomb in which no one had yet been laid. So because of the Jewish day of preparation, since the tomb was close at hand, they laid Jesus there.
Well, church, my name is Austin. I'm on the team here. And today we're moving closer to Easter. And so tonight we're observing Good Friday, which marks the crucifixion of Jesus. Just 2 days away from Easter and kind of concludes our 40-day Lenten journey of fasting. So all over the world right now, the Big C Church will be observing Easter this Sunday. All over the world, folks will be remembering resurrection on Sunday. But there is no resurrection without first crucifixion. And so tonight, as Trevor read John 18 and 19, I'll just be kind of pointing out a couple of things along the way. And John is simply a gospel, which means the good news about Jesus. However, as we just heard Trevor read, there's nothing about what we just read that sounds like good news. It's only good. This Friday is only good in the sense that the resurrection shines a light on this crucifixion. And it's in this crucifixion in which we see how deep the Father's love for us. And so tonight, as we kind of look at some spaces between John 18 and 19, we're really looking at the final hours of the life of Jesus. Some scholars say this is the final 15 hours of his life, from midnight until 3 p.m. And there is no doubt about it. It is 15 hours of misery and loneliness and despair and pain and darkness. And it's 15 hours that don't catch Jesus by surprise. Certainly, we know the story of Jesus telling his disciples just before this to stay awake with him as they pray. I would imagine certainly the night leading up to this, Jesus got no sleep because he was in prayer. But certainly Jesus, knowing that this was coming, had probably not slept in weeks. And so tonight, we're just going to look at seven sections of this text. And remember just how dark it gets for Jesus in these final 15 hours. And we want to remember this first. This happens roughly, according to scholars, at midnight of the day in which Jesus will be crucified. It's the top of night. And Good Friday reminds us that as Jesus is praying in the garden with his disciples, he will choose to drink from the cup that God is giving him. John 18, verse 11, after Peter takes out his sword to try and strike the soldiers, says, "Put your sword away. Shall I not drink the cup the Father has given me?" On Good Friday, we remember that Jesus, in a moment in which he could have turned from his assignment, no doubt he was good at evading authorities and missing people that were trying to find him. In this moment in which he could have disappeared, skirted out, avoided the assignment, Jesus stays true to what God had called him to do, to drink the cup the Father had given him. A few hours later, maybe it's 3 a.m. in the morning at this time, Good Friday reminds us that while Jesus will drink deeply from the cup the Father is giving him, even his most zealous supporters, Peter specifically, will deny Jesus. When it comes to Peter, chapter 18, verse 17 reminds us, when he's asked, "You aren't one of this man's disciples too, are you?" She asked Peter. He replied, "I'm not." And then again in verse 25. So again, some other folks asked him, "You aren't one of his disciples too, are you?" And he denied it, saying, "I am not." And then again in verse 26, one of the high priest's servants, a relative of the man whose ear Peter had cut off, challenged him, "Didn't I see you with him in the garden?" Verse 27, again, Peter denied it. And at that moment, a rooster began to crow. We remember, and students, this is actually one of your fill-in-the-blanks, even the zealous deny Jesus on Good Friday. And maybe just a few hours later at 6 a.m., Good Friday reminds us that not just his most zealous supporters will deny him, but the religious and the elites will dispose of Jesus. When it comes to the high priest, verse 20, "I have spoken openly to the world," Jesus replied. "I always taught in synagogues or at the temple where all the Jews come together. I said nothing in secret. Why question me? Ask those who heard me. Surely they know what I said." Verse 22, when Jesus said this, one of the officials nearby slapped him in the face. "Is this the way you answer the high priest?" he demanded. Verse 23, "If I said something wrong," Jesus replied, "testify as to what is wrong. But if I spoke the truth, why did you strike me?" Then Annas sent him bound to Caiaphas, the high priest. That's the religious kind of disposing of Jesus. And when it comes to Pilate, Pilate goes back and forth with Jesus. Pilate has an exchange with the Jews and then has an exchange with Jesus and then has Jesus flogged and tries to give him back to the Jews. And Pilate has another exchange with the Jews and another exchange with Jesus. And eventually Pilate just hands him over to the Jews. Verse 16, finally Pilate handed him over to them to be crucified. The claims of Jesus make Pilate so uncomfortable. He just wants to deflect and dispose and get rid of Jesus, but so do the religious elites. Students, that's one of your other fill in the blanks. Even the religious and the elites dispose of Jesus. And so his most ardent supporters and now the religious and the elites are trying to get rid of him. And by 9 a.m., Jesus is sentenced to be crucified. And Good Friday reminds us that even all the people will despise Jesus. Verse 12 of chapter 19, from then on, Pilate tried to set Jesus free, but the Jewish leaders kept shouting, "If you let this man go, you are no friend of Caesar. Anyone who claims to be a king opposes Caesar." Verse 15, when the people continued to shout, take him away, crucify him. We have no king but Caesar. Verse 21, the chief priests of the Jews protested to Pilate, "Do not write king of the Jews, but that this man only claimed to be king of the Jews." Even the people at large on Good Friday despise Jesus. And finally, Jesus is crucified. Probably about midday, about 12 p.m., about 12 hours from when he was first handed over to the authorities. And Good Friday reminds us that soldiers will mock him by dividing the clothes of Jesus among themselves. When the soldiers crucified Jesus, they took his clothes, dividing them into four shares, one for each of them, with the undergarment remaining. This garment was seamless, woven in one piece from top to bottom. Verse 24, "Let's not tear it," they said to one another. "Let's decide by lot who will get it." This happened that the scripture might be fulfilled that said, "They divided my clothes among them and cast lots for my garment." So this is what the soldiers did. At this moment on Good Friday, just everything is being taken from Jesus. His friends, the support of religious leaders and elites, the support of the crowds and the people, his dignity, and at this point his very clothing is being divided up. And finally, at about 3 p.m., Good Friday reminds us of the death of Jesus. Verse 28 of chapter 19, later, knowing that everything had now been finished and so that scripture would be fulfilled, Jesus said, "I am thirsty." Verse 29, a jar of wine vinegar was there. So they soaked a sponge in it, put the sponge on a stalk of the hyssop plant and lifted it to Jesus' lips. When he had received the drink, Jesus said, "It is finished. It's over. It's done." And with that, he bowed his head and gave up his spirit. It's at this moment Jesus dies on the cross. He does not faint. He does not go into shock. He does not fall asleep. But on the cross, Jesus breathes his last. On Good Friday, we remember the death of Jesus. And finally, and this is the last point, Good Friday reminds us of the absolute darkness that surrounded all of these events. He will be placed in a dark tomb. Chapter 19, verse 41, at the place where Jesus was crucified, there was a garden, and in the garden, a new tomb, in which no one had ever been laid, because it was the Jewish day of preparation, and since the tomb was nearby, they laid Jesus there. And so as Jesus, as we remember, Jesus lays in his grave, we are reminded of the darkness that came against Jesus on Good Friday. He would be denied by his closest friends and his most ardent supporters, could be deflected of and disposed of by the religious elites that had heard him teaching in the temple and by the political elites that had certainly heard stories about even soldiers that reported to him being healed. Jesus would hear the cheers and the crowd shouting that they wanted him to be crucified. As all of these people have abandoned him, he would see even soldiers beginning to divide up his clothes before the eventual death of Jesus. And students, that's the final fill in the blank. It is people like us that have put Jesus to death. And so tonight, as we just enter into this and reflect on it, as we really are preparing our hearts for Easter, we're going to close this service with one more song. And then as soon as the song is finished, you'll see it on the screen that, you know, we're going to go into a moment of silence and you can kind of trickle out as you're ready. But as we sing this song, and as you sit in silence, reflect and remember that when confronted with Jesus, with confronted with the claims of who Jesus is, we too, at various times and in various places and amongst various people, we too have denied Jesus. We too have deflected and kind of disposed of being connected to him when it's been convenient for us. We too at times have despised him, despised his claims, and despised the way he's called us to live. And so as much as it was the first century folks that laid Jesus in his grave, we aren't that much unlike them. And we need the mercy and the grace and the forgiveness of Jesus. So let's reflect on that this evening.